Hey, it's Jamie Scrimger. When I became a stepmom, I quickly realized that while moms are encouraged to keep it real, there's a big double standard when it comes to stepmoms. So I decided to start the conversation myself. Thriving as a stepmom doesn't just come from conversations about being a stepmom, though. Here, we dive into marriage, relationships, personal growth, and more. My mission? Inspire you to live a kick-ass life while bringing you along as I create my own. This is the Kick-Ass Stepmom Podcast. Hello, hello. Welcome to the Kick-Ass Stepmom Podcast. I have a really good one for you guys today. Jennifer Teplin is on the show. She is the founder and clinical director of a boutique psychotherapy practice in New York with mentions in Cosmopolitan and Oprah Magazine, along with her master's degree from Columbia University. Jennifer has not only created a space for therapeutic healing, she really has created a movement that changes the landscape for therapy and counseling. She really isn't about checking the boxes and just being like, okay, yeah, I went to therapy, did the thing. It's really about diving in and supporting her clients through the entire growth process. Now, in this episode, we dive into so many things that I know a lot of women can relate to. So the guilt that moms and stepmoms have for how they thought they would feel about motherhood or stepmotherhood, and then how they actually feel. The jealousy, comparison, perfectionism, need for control, anxiety. And we also dive into the power of gratitude. This is such a good conversation, especially for the perfectionists or those who are struggling with things that they can't control in their lives. Let's dive in. Can't wait for you to hear this one. All right, Jennifer, welcome to the podcast. We were just talking off air. We weren't able to make this happen for a bit. You know, you got puking kids, all the things, but that's parenting, right? The juggle.
And especially when you need things to just go as planned, that is the moment that four obstacles, I think, just automatically get thrown in the way.
I know. Yeah. Every single time. I think you just need to expect it. You know, it actually goes into a question I want to talk to you about. But first, give us the lowdown. Give us your elevator pitch. Tell everyone about yourself.
So my name is Jennifer Teplin. I am the founder of Manhattan Wellness. We are a boutique therapy practice in Flatiron in New York City. I right now have 18 therapists. We're about to bump up to 22, actually. And we specialize in supporting professional women experiencing a whole range of things. But I would say most commonly those life transition moments. So the single to partnered, partnered to married, married to family planning to new mom, and then sort of what the heck from there. And we work in a very real and authentic way with our clients. We grow with our clients, and our phrasing is here for you always. And we really mean that. We know that therapy, yes, it's 45 minutes of your week, but life happens outside of that space, and we're available to our clients in a very just real and applicable way that I think really makes our practice unique.
Yeah, I love that you say being available for your clients during those transition periods, because I don't know, I can speak about this as being a stepmom. That's a huge transition that a lot of women in my community go through. They were dating someone or they were single, then maybe they didn't have kids, and then they are hooking up with someone with kids and what that transition looks like. Or then there's also you're divorced and you're single parenting, and then you're blending a family. Transitions are just, they're just so hard. And I think we never know what to expect.
I agree with you. I think they're really hard. And I also think they're always happening. So often people think, oh, I'm just in this phase. Unless your life just gets frozen in time, we're always actually in a transition, always evolving forward. So it's really about being able to help someone in whatever transition they're finding difficulty or want the support, and actually giving them the skills. So as they go through their life and they hit all of these other milestones, they have the skills and they feel capable and empowered to be successful in those moments.
Mm-hmm. So what are the skills that you need for transitions? What do we need to do? What do we need?
The hardest thing is learning flexibility and letting go of control. It is so difficult. And I would say, especially as a new mom, especially walking into a step-parent role, a blended family role, we just want to make sure everything goes perfectly. And unfortunately, parenting just, you and I were discussing it before. Parenting, there's no perfect way to do it. There's no right way to do it. And if you plan, you're just sort of wasting your daylight hours. So I think it's starting to recognize, what are the things that aren't working for me? Where are the areas that I'm getting totally stuck and I call it white knuckling or like muscling the situation. And is it working? Most likely not. And that's how you probably end up in front of me, or that's how someone, you know, finds your podcast, because they're looking for some resolution or to at least feel less alone in what they're going through. But I think it's recognizing and starting to accept what we can't control and actually bringing yourself back every single time you feel yourself grasping or forcing. You know, the example I give to my clients who are single, it's the guy isn't texting you. So you think, let me post a thirst trap on Instagram stories. He's going to like that story and then he's going to text me. That's a really cute idea in concept, but is that really authentic, or is that just forcing a situation to play out? And I think the same with parenting. When we want to control our kids, we hold on to something tighter, and guess what? They're going to pull further. You're going to let go when they fall. And so I think once we accept, you know, it's a reality of parenting, but I also think it's a reality of life. We can't control our partners. The only person we can control is ourselves, and getting comfortable with that lack of control enables every individual to function and flow better in their life.
Mm-hmm. I know. And it's so much easier said than done, right? Like, let go of things you can't control. But it is really true. And I think when you get to the point when you can truly do that, and that's a lot of the work that I do with stepmoms, it's like, I love that you just said, is what I'm doing working? Because that's one of the big questions I ask stepmoms to ask themselves. Like, the way you're showing up for your stepkids, the way you're dealing with the ex, the way that you're maybe trying to have control over everything that happens in your home, is it working? Like, is it making things better, or is it making things worse?
Is it serving you?
Yeah. Is it impacting your ability to show up? And I talk a lot about disengaging and the power of disengaging in the right way. But even just asking yourself that question in all areas of your life, like, is this working? I saw this thing on Instagram the other day, and it was from a business coach that I follow. And it really hit home for me too, because she's like, you know, if you're continuing to do the same thing over and over again, but like you want to take your life to the next level, you're not going to get there, right? Like, what got you here is not going to get you there. And I think that's true when it comes to families and parenting and all the things.
Yeah. And I think it's also hard to recognize, okay, if we can recognize what we're doing isn't working, that means we have to come up with an entirely new plan or way of functioning, which is also extremely challenging. So I think the first step is recognizing it's not working. And then the second step is getting curious about what actually could potentially work, and then ask for the support from those around you if you need it to get yourself there.
I have a question for you. Are you on the Element train yet? Element is my go-to electrolyte drink mix. I swear by it. And I have been drinking it daily for, I'd say, a couple years now. Staying hydrated is a crucial and huge priority of mine. And proper hydration isn't just about drinking water. It means having adequate water and electrolytes. Element tastes great. It has no BS ingredients, no sugar, no artificial coloring, and you feel good when you drink it. Formulated to help anyone with their electrolyte needs, from professional athletes to everyday mom, even if you're following like a keto or a low carb or paleo diet, it is so good. And it is also approved by the Metabolic Reset Program that I have been doing as well. Element is just, it's good. It's always approved. A growing body of research reveals that optimal health outcomes occur at sodium levels that are actually 2.3 times the government recommendation. That's why Element is saying more salt and not less. Each stick of Element has 100 milligrams of sodium, 200 milligrams of potassium, and 60 milligrams of magnesium. My favorite flavors are raspberry and watermelon. And when you purchase Element using my code, you will get a free sample pack with all the flavors so you can decide which one is your fave. Head to www.drinkelement.com/kickassstepmom to get a free sample pack with purchase. That's www.drinkelement.com/kickassstepmom to get a free sample pack with purchase. I have Element before workouts, after maybe a little bit too much wine, when I'm traveling, and midday when I'm not really ready for dinner yet, but I need a little something. Head to www.drinkelement.com/kickassstepmom, my go-to electrolyte drink. I never understood the difference or the value in investing in good sheets for your bed until I started sleeping in Cozy Earth's bamboo sheets. They are literally unreal. It is such a different experience. And for the last several months, I have had this urge to freshen up our bedroom with new sheets and a more clean vibe and just a fresh vibe. And I've been looking for the perfect quilt to go at the end of our bed. And Cozy Earth pulled through again. I finally found the perfect one. So I got a new crisp white duvet cover, new sheets, and a quilt, and it really is looking good. Guys, you can feel the difference with their best-selling bamboo sheets made from 100% premium viscose from bamboo. They are temperature regulating, which is key, because if you know, you know. They are so freaking soft and have this oversized fit and a gentle drape, which I appreciate because it drives me wild when sheets or duvet covers aren't big enough for the bed. Like, you can see the sides peeking out. I seriously hate that. So these sheets go right to the bottom. They're very deep. It just looks so good. And they get softer with every wash. For the quilt, I ended up getting the linen box quilt. I got the natural color. You know I love my neutrals. And it is woven from the finest blend of bamboo viscose and French flax linen. The quilt's texture and breathability, it's so soft and it is perfect for year round, which I love because I like to keep things simple and I don't want to be switching out my sheets or switching out my bedding for winter or spring or summer. I just want to have it work all year round. So guys, it is looking good. It is so beautiful. Cozy Earth has been a long-term sponsor of the podcast and I have been sleeping in their sheets. I have been wearing their PJs and their loungewear for years. They are so comfortable and it's no wonder they have been on Oprah's Favorite Things year after year. And I'm pretty sure that I just saw Kim Kardashian wearing their PJs on Instagram. I've had listeners reach out and tell me that they got themselves some Cozy Earth after listening to the podcast, and they too are obsessed. So Cozy Earth generously gives listeners of the Kick-Ass Stepmom podcast 40% off your order. So all you have to do is use the code COZYJAMIE40 at checkout and get 40%, which is crazy. Such a great discount. So head to www.cozyearth.com, use the code COZYJAMIE40 for 40% off. Now, one of the questions we kind of had talked about addressing on here is what happens when, you know, motherhood and stepmotherhood, it doesn't feel the way you wanted it to feel, right? Like, we all had these visions for what life was going to be like as an adult and how we would show up and all the things. And then when it doesn't feel that way, when you don't feel that way about your stepkids, when you don't feel that way about even just being a mom, like, how do you deal with that? Because I think so many women are struggling with that right now. Well, they always were, but people are just talking about it more. But yeah, it's just motherhood, man.
It's a tough gig. It's very entertaining, but it is also, you know, growing up, I had those blow up chairs from like the Limited 2. Do you know what I'm talking about? Maybe not. They're like, picture the 90s and you just blow up this plastic chair and you would sit in it with your friends.
100%.
And then there'd be a hole in it and you would have to patch it with like one of their patches if you saved them.
Yeah.
And I sort of feel like motherhood is just constantly filling the air into that chair, but there's a hole and you have no idea where the hole is. It's so draining. And I think you're right. So many women picture motherhood to be a certain way or fantasize that it's going to be a certain way. And when it's not, it's extremely uncomfortable. And I think so many people feel as though they're ungrateful or they're doing it wrong. And the reality is, if we went off of Instagram and actually just talked to people that we were truly connected with, we would realize there's the good and the bad. And I don't really know anything in life that goes exactly how we expected it to go, whether that's finding your partner, you know, especially as a stepmom. Like, did you think your partner was going to have children? Did you think you were going to have a blended family? Like, who knows? But it worked out and you went with the flow and you rolled with it. And not to bring us back to control, but like, you let go of the control and you followed your heart and here you are in this beautiful life, right? So I think it's really important for people to realize that nothing ever goes as planned, but also to recognize that life and our experience is always going to be on a spectrum or a pendulum. We're not just happy and that means we're happy for the rest of our life. I always say when we wake up in the morning, you know, we sort of choose our own mood to start the day and then things happen to kind of knock us into a different position. So I always encourage clients and anyone that I'm speaking with, start your day as successfully as possible because that's the only part you can control from like wake up to, you know, 30 minutes later when you're drinking your coffee, that is your sweet spot of actually control. The rest, you're sort of just defending yourself against the elements. And I really think motherhood is that way as well.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, there's all the highlight reels on Instagram now, and I don't want to get into that whole rabbit hole because I think people are responsible to understand that when they're going through their feed, like people are sharing their highlight reel as they always did on Facebook. Like we're just sharing those moments. Like that's what you would put in a frame on your wall. But you almost have to live for the highlight reel. Like I was doing this before it was even cool to do these things on Instagram, but like the little montages of those key moments. I used to always do that of our weekend, like from our old recorder, right? Like I would always put them together. Or
recorder really did it. Your digital camera, my recorder.
Yeah, whatever it was. Yeah. And you have to live for those moments. Like I would go and we would be on a family vacation and I'd be like, yeah, you have those moments that are like the lulls and everyone just seems kind of bored, or like before dinner, or like kind of those awkward moments, or like when the kids are being shits and things like that. But then you can go back and you can like reflect on those moments that you did document and you're like, oh my God, that was such a great vacation, or that was such a great time. And if you look at your life in that way too, like to expect that every moment of every day is going to be great in motherhood, like it's just like unrealistic expectations. And maybe you are one of those moms who like truly love every moment. I do believe they exist. They're not in my world.
They exist, but it's not relatable.
No, it's not.
I think that it's the friend that every time you call, they say everything's perfect. Okay, that's a 3-minute phone call because you're not going to share anything when you're being real. So I just, do those people exist? Absolutely. Do I think that they are just so out of touch with what they're experiencing? Probably. But that's their choice.
True, totally. But you've got to like live for those moments, right? And like that is what the goal is, right? So if at the end of the day, you have like 5 good moments, you're like, chalk it up. Like, you know, it's success.
I'll take it. And I also think the shitty moments make the good moments so much better.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
I know that when I first got on the phone with you, I had shared that my daughter was sick last night. She sleeps 7 to 7. She's almost 2. It's the greatest gift ever. Do I appreciate it? Totally. Do I appreciate it so much more this morning since I was up all night last night? Totally. So we sort of need those lower moments, those less perfect moments, those not frame-worthy moments to make us really value what goes in that frame. And I also think it's about having a realistic expectation of how often things should be good. We are not going to be good and perfect 100% of the time. And if that's what we're striving, we're always going to feel disappointed. So I always say, we want more than 60-40, but like if you're getting close, but you're still above 60 of the good, I would argue you're in a pretty good position. Like more times than not is a really good place to start. And then we strive for more, but we're just never going to get to 100%. And I think that lack of satisfaction that comes with perfectionism leaves people feeling like they aren't giving enough, when I think there is not a mother on the planet who does not give enough.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And I think the guilt comes from how it feels, right? Especially with stepmoms. There's a lot of stepmoms who just feel so guilty that they don't, you know, love their stepkids like their own, that they don't look forward to their stepkids always coming, or that they're looking forward to their stepkids going back to their moms. And like, come on, we have to be realistic here. First of all, to put on the pressure that you're going to love someone else's children like your own, that is a huge ask. It happens, totally. But how many of those stepmoms are like, I love them like they're my own? And like deep down, or maybe if they really dove into that, is it a little bit different? I don't know. I know for a lot of women it is.
I think it sort of has to be, but I think there's a more of a freedom in a biological mother than there is in a stepmother of being able to admit the not good stuff.
100%.
Like for some reason, there is such a pressure on a stepmom to be like, oh my God, no, everything's perfect. We have no problems. Like we're such a perfect blended family. Their birth parents also love me. Like
bullshit.
How realistic is it that all of that shit is falling into place? Like you're just a liar. There has to be bumps in the road. And for someone who is the biological parent, okay, it's not a step parent, but it's your mother-in-law, right? There's always going to be that character that comes in that maybe, you know, ruffles a feather or two. But I think that's existing. But being a stepmom, there's definitely less grace in admitting the shit.
Oh, 100%. Think about this, like after school holidays and stuff too, right? Like you have a stepmom at the end of March break who's like, oh my God, I cannot wait for my stepkids to go back to their mom's house or for them to go back to school. They're driving me nuts, you know, totally crucified. But then you have a mom who's like, oh, I'm at my wit's end. Like March break needs to end. These kids need to go back to school. And everyone's like, preach it, sister. You know, like it's just, it's not the same when really there's a lot of like overlap in the roles. And I think like as stepmoms, having these conversations and talking about these unrealistic expectations and these unrealistic standards is healthy because, again, there's just like so much pressure on that and that guilt of not feeling the way that you think you're supposed to feel or you thought you would feel. Like, again, coming down to the expectations, like, for example, I 100% thought I loved my stepkids like they were my own. And if you are listening to this and you're a childless stepmom and this is very triggering to you, I'm not intending it to be triggering and I'm not minimizing your experience. Nothing like that. This is just my experience. But when I had our daughter, Reese, I realized the way that I loved Reese is very different than the way that I love my stepkids. Like there's like that, like she came out of my body. Like I had been with her since day one and it's been different since day one and not in a good, not in a bad way, right? Like not in a, like I am the evil stepmom way, but like I have a different relationship with her and that is okay. Like that's okay.
I love that you're giving permission to it because you're right. That is okay. And I would almost say I would question if you didn't feel that way because I think it is so natural and it is so guttural. And I also don't think that people need to compare and contrast in this way. Like you have love for your stepchildren, you care about your stepchildren, you're doing your best to meet their needs. Why is that not enough?
Mm-hmm.
I think stepmoms need, well, maybe it's you. I was going to say they needed a new PR team, but it might be Jamie right here.
I think it might be me. I think Jamie needs a PR team too, though.
Don't we all? But I also think as divorce rises, the stepmom is going to increase. So either someone needs to change the PR or the world just needs to wake up and realize, you know, stepmoms are on the rise. So people need to get a little more comfortable with it. And I just wonder if it's that people just can't understand how someone can step into that role and just love. And I think that's really where the judgments or the criticism or like the tilt of the head comes from. But the way you describe the love for your daughter, like, you should feel different. She grew inside of you. She is half you. Like, why wouldn't you? Why is that an unusual statement to be able to say?
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, the other piece is like the moms pitting, like the stepmom mom comparison, assuming the worst. I literally just did this reel that I'm going to share talking about like how stepmoms and moms need to just stop assuming the worst of each other. And look, there's some hell of a situations where, you know, it is the worst. Like it is always bad intentions. It's always bullshit. Like I'm not minimizing that. But I think these women were just like constantly pit against each other. And it's that comparison piece too, right? Like moms need to stop comparing the way they're mothering with like their neighbor down the street, stepmoms and, you know, moms need to stop comparing. Like we all need to be like, we are all individual people. So the way that I'm going to show up as a mom is so different than the way you're going to show up as a mom because we're different. We're just different people. And that's okay.
Where do you think partners come into play? Like, is there something that partners could be doing differently to better support and reduce that comparison? Or do you feel like most of the time, you know, the partner doesn't really get involved because it gets a little sticky? I always wonder that.
Well, I think that a lot of times these partners will come in and they want to like tell their new partner like how shitty their ex was. Well, it's like she was such a bitch about this, or like, you know, she does this or she does that. Well, I know. I had a conversation with Darren once. I was like, okay, you are remembering things right now about your relationship based on the story that you guys, that you have right now. It has to be aligned with your storyline. So if you're sitting here to your new wife and are saying how amazing your ex was,
it would be weird.
It'd be weird. It'd be like, what is it? Dissonance?
Cognitive dissonance. Exactly. Stop, Jamie. You're a therapist.
Yeah. I have a psych degree. No, but you know, it's uncomfortable. And so they're not going to say that. So I've said to Darren, I said, no, you had great vacations with her. You had great times together. She's way more fun than I am. I know that. right? Like, I know there was all these great things, but I don't think that, you know, stepmoms are willing to hear that, right? Like, that's a little awkward to hear that about your partner's ex. And partners aren't willing to like share that too. So they're always sharing the bad things. And then that paints the stepmom's perception of her. And then you always end up like assuming the worst. So it's almost like even still, like kind of goes to patriarchy. Like we're like competing for the man or competing to be the better mom or competing to be the better wife. And it's like, come on, she could have been a great wife. And then they split and now he's with you and you guys are going to have a great relationship. But like shitting on her doesn't make you a better stepmom or your marriage even any better either.
And also, if she was so horrible this whole time, what is wrong with you that you chose her and that you stayed with her for this long? Like, that to me is more questionable than anything.
Yeah. Well, I will say, I remember, speaking of therapists, I will say, I remember listening to Dr. Phil. I used to watch Dr. Phil every day after school.
Didn't we all, though?
Loved it. And he said, the person you marry and the person you divorce are two different people.
Fair.
It kind of brings out these emotions and this like insecurity that we never saw coming. True or false, but it is interesting. But yeah, it's true. Like you were married to her for 10 years. So like,
yeah, like you made some sort of choice there. At some point it changed and you continued to be okay with it.
Yeah. Anyway, I just think just that comparison piece, like how do women get out of that? Like what kind of mindset work do you need to do to stop comparing yourself to what other people are doing?
I think it's finding confidence within yourself and giving yourself that check mark. I think when we go on Instagram and we're scrolling and we're making the comparisons, we're really looking at, okay, here's how they are. How do I line up to that? And you're either going to look at it and feel great about yourself or you're going to look at it and feel terrible. Oftentimes, you're sitting with like a stain on your shirt in yesterday's sweatpants scrolling through this beautiful influencer's curated graphics. So you're going to end up on the wrong side of history there. But for the person that's totally decked up, feeling good and decides to scroll Instagram rather than go into the world, maybe you leave it feeling really good. So I think it's using comparison to identify how we're doing or where we measure up in the world that really leads people to continue comparing. Because I think if we just showed up and I came here today and I was like, I'm so fabulous, Jamie, you are so lucky to have me on this podcast, I would seem cocky. I would seem arrogant. I would seem all of these things. And I think women are not allowed to feel confident and proud. There's a negative spin on it. And I know that's not a new concept, right? I mean, when we look at the workplace, the same thing will happen. The woman's bossy and the man is a leader, right? And I think the same thing plays out when it comes to motherhood, stepmotherhood, and anything in between. We are expected to show up at 100%, but you shouldn't show up too much and you shouldn't shine too bright, because if you were to blind someone with how fabulous you were, that would also be your fault. So there's just no way to win, really. And there's no way to feel confident unless you just almost like remove yourself from society and just decide I'm going to dictate what success looks like.
Mm-hmm. And working on your own confidence though is such a process, but I do think it's something we should all dive into. Like, you know, I can look back to when I first became a mom and a stepmom. And if someone would have brought like homemade, a bunch of like really great stuff to a potluck or a really great appetizer, or like something to the school or whatever things you bring food to.
Yeah. To the bake sale. Who knows?
To the big sale, I would have felt like I was not good enough or that was better than me. It would like make me feel pressure. Now I am like heading to Sobeys, grabbing the muffins, putting them in a bin, like 100%. That's not my strength, right? Like that's not how I'm going to show up. And I think when you start to really get like true to like, what value do you bring to this situation? Maybe that's not your strength. Banking is not my strength. Cooking is not my strength. I'm never going to invite you over to have a really nice dinner party ever to anyone. I don't care who you are in my world, right? But I don't feel like I have to just because the neighbor is doing that, because I've gotten really secure on who I am. But that's like a 10-year process in motherhood, right? Like, how do we really work on that in ourselves and just find that confidence?
Absolutely. And even in that example you gave, okay, you go to the bake sale, this mom made this decadent whatever. We have two choices. We can celebrate her. Actually, you have more than two choices. We can celebrate her and still feel good about yourself. We can shit on her because she has so much time on her hands that she was able to do this and I'm so busy and important.
Not as busy as you.
Right. Or it's she's so great. Why am I so horrible? And I'm sure there's five other thoughts that aren't coming to mind right now. But the reality is, her existence and what she chooses to do genuinely has no effect on who you are, how you're showing up, how you measure up, or anything. So it's really all about perception. And when I think about confidence, where I start is with the inner critic and with our inner narrative. So even as you and I are having this conversation right now, we also have this secondary reel playing, right? I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, is Jamie happy I'm on her podcast? Is what I'm saying making sense? Is my daughter who was sick last night okay, right? And I'm still engaged in our conversation, but there's more going on. And if we have a negative inner critic, what those statements would be is, I'm a terrible mom that my daughter's with her nanny after she was sick last night. There's no way Jamie's happier on this podcast. And you have no idea what you're talking about. How did you weasel your way into this, right? That would be the critic's version. And if we had a positive, like, not inner critic, but, you know, inner voice, it would be, I'm so happy that I'm here. It's so amazing that I'm able to have a nanny who can support me and my daughter so that I can continue to grow my career. And of course, what I'm saying makes sense because I know what I'm talking about. And all of those things are talking about the same exact experience, but it's the perception and it's the selection we make. So the first step is recognizing that critical voice or that supportive voice. And if it's critical, it's becoming aware and starting to find alternate options and replacement choices. And if you have a positive voice in your head, good for you. Welcome to the club. It takes most people a long time to get there, but continue to grow it and embrace it. Because it's really not about what the world says to us. It's about what we say to ourselves that then impacts how we actually show up.
No, totally. What about the power of journaling in that? Like even writing like gratitude and strength lists and things like that. Like, I love doing stuff like that.
If it can be a routine for you, I love journaling. I think journaling stinks for the person who only takes out the journal when they're feeling horrible. And they've done nothing to take care of themselves. And like, they're like, okay, I'm going to go to the sauna. I'm going to journal. I'm going to eat green and I'm going to go to therapy. Like, that's all great in concept, but that's not going to save you when you get in this rut. Routine is what's going to keep you out of it. So I love journaling. And if you're not someone who can sit and kind of dump your thoughts, I think identifying one thing that went better than expected, something you're looking forward to, gratitude list, strength list, all of those are great. I think for someone who is so weighed down by their critical statements and their critical thoughts, writing them down and actually seeing them totally, totally changes what you say and what you think. Thinking it is so invisible and you can just have it going, la-di-da, it's all fact and we don't have to worry about it. When you actually put it to paper and have to read it to yourself, there's some level of like, I think it's first a little sprinkle of shame, but then hopefully the protective aspect of yourself comes in and tries to like nurture the situation.
Totally. I had a stepmom in the membership. We were on a call and she was talking about just all the stories she was telling herself, like why she feels like she's not showing up good enough as a stepmom. And she had just all of these like bullshit narratives in her head, the things that she was saying. I'm like, do you really think that's true? Right? Like if I don't do this perfectly, the kids will hate me. Or if I don't do this, if I don't have all the dishes done, then I'm not a good stepmom. Like all of these just stories. And I said, I want you to go and write all of these stories down on a list. And I want you to email them to me. Like I want all of them. And then I want you to go through and be like, is that true? Like, do I have any proof that that is true? Like, where did I even get this narrative from? And she found it so powerful to write out that whole list. And she's like, wow, like that is super screwed up. She was even able to see it, right?
Also, it's impossible, right? It's just impossible to meet all of those needs. And for someone who is like that, or for someone who really finds that anxiety is their motivator, one of my favorite challenges is for them to look at the best case scenario, the worst case scenario, and the most likely. And I always say, keep a note in your phone so we can see this reel just running through everything you're experiencing. And you're going to find out 95% of the time, it's most likely. 4% of the time, maybe more, it's best case. 1%, probably less than 1% is the worst case scenario. And we allot so much time to that fear of the 1%. And I almost think it causes us to fall. I always give this analogy of, if you're walking down the street and you're saying to yourself, I'm going to fall, I'm going to fall, I'm going to fall. Guess what? You're going to eat shit.
You're going to fall.
because I just guarantee it versus someone who's walking with pride and strength and confidence, who's going to just glide across whatever is going to get in their way.
I'm a big believer in the whole look good, feel good mentality. And I know that when I am feeling at my best, when I am taking care of myself, when I am taking care of my body and nourishing myself, all the things, I am so much more equipped to deal with the extra stress that comes with, you know, our stepfamily dynamic. Now, if you listen to episode I did with Jen Vasey, I think it was episode 214, since September 2023, I have been doing the Metabolic Balance Program, and it has been basically a game changer for me and my body and for how I feel in general. I think this is the best money that I've ever spent on myself. I got into my mid-30s and all of a sudden I was gaining weight, I was feeling fluffy, I was tired, and no matter what I did with my diet or exercise, it was like nothing was budging. I didn't know what else to do. So I decided to try the Metabolic Balance Program and just commit to working with Jen. And so here is the lowdown on the Metabolic Balance Program. So it is a science-backed, all-natural nutrition program that pairs the chemistry of your blood values with the chemistry of food and uses food to heal. So by knowing the exact foods that are right for you to orchestrate change in the body, you will achieve less inflammation, stabilize your blood sugars, have consistent energy, have a healthy digestive system, hormonal balance, and just optimal body weight. So basically, with this program, you go and get your blood tested, they take your results, and they create a custom nutrition plan for you. So my girlfriend's food list was completely different than mine. In fact, her food list, I felt like it was a lot better. I was a little upset about that, but it was so crazy. Anyway, it has been such a success for me and so many other women who I have connected with, and I highly recommend checking her out. So if you are feeling like the scale won't budge, if you're not feeling confident, your hormones are off, all of the things, it's truly such a game changer. So if you're interested in starting on that wellness journey with Jen, you can contact Jen Vasey and find her on Instagram at Jen, J-E-N dot T-H-E dot R-H-N. So Jen Vasey on Instagram, Jen dot the dot R-H-N. Again, this was the best money I have ever spent on myself, and I feel like I am telling any woman who will listen about this program. And when you're talking to Jen, let her know that I sent you, or you can use the code KICKASSSTEPMOM and you can save $100 off the investment, which is huge. Let's skip over to talking about things that you can control and things that you can't control, because we were talking about that at the beginning, and I think it's really powerful and really resonates with a lot of stepmoms. When someone is focusing on all the things that they can't control, how do you support them in like bringing it back and taking back their power?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a powerless position to be obsessing over the things we can't control. And as a stepmom, especially at the beginning, I mean, there's just not much you can control besides yourself. And it's sort of like your hands are tied and you have to smile no matter what is playing out in front of you. And I think it's such a brutal scenario. But I think it's to look at why it feels important or why it feels necessary for us to control this aspect. And when we're looking for control, we're really looking to remain safe. Control, like when someone says, I'm a control freak, you're not a control freak. You want to ensure your safety and your success. And I think it's very prehistoric, if you will, like very caveman to feel that way. So when someone's obsessing over the things they can't control, my first question to them is, name a time in which you previously have been able to control this, or what is the fantasy you're playing out in which you can? And if we can't identify any way that this can be controlled, it's figuring out how we can feel safe in other ways that can sort of meet the needs of whatever that element is. So my children or my stepchildren aren't reacting to me in the way that I want them to. And I keep doing everything I think they want me to do, and they still just roll their eyes when I want to turn the TV off or something really basic. There's nothing we can do to control it. We can call out what's going on. We can have a conversation. And I love encouraging, as long as the child is old enough, right? Like with my daughter, there's not much we can do besides saying, like, not working, to the TV. But for a child that understands, or a teenager or a grown adult, being able to sit down and saying, you know, I'm doing my best here. I thought that this is working. It kind of seems like it might not be for you. What can I do differently? and be curious to that feedback. Adults do not ask kids enough what they need or what they'd prefer. And sometimes their preference is going to be ridiculous and so not realistic. But being a child and not having control is almost more intense than being the stepmom or the mother and feeling like you don't have control. When in reality, we definitely have much more control over someone who's under 18 years old. So being willing to have that conversation and come from sort of a collaborative mindset when appropriate, I find humanizes us and makes the receiver of whatever's happening a lot more gentle and understanding.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I think just like being honest and vulnerable with kids too, because I think as stepmoms, you can say like, I'm just trying my very best. Like, what am I doing? Is there something that's rubbing you the wrong way? Like, what do you need from me? Right? Here's how I'm feeling. And I think often kids don't even really realize how they're making people feel. Because again, they haven't humanized the stepmom. She's just kind of, I always say it's not about you, it's about what you represent.
100%. I don't think kids realize that parents are humans with feelings either until they're like out of college at this point. So I think that's also a piece of it, that life is happening to them so much more intensely than it's happening to us. And we still feel it so deeply. So I agree with you. I think it's humanizing. And I think it's pointing out and letting them know how their behavior is affecting us. Mm-hmm. So they can clarify if they're meaning something different or if we're really spot on. And they may say, I want my parents to get back together. And the reality is, it's like, that sounds nice. There's nothing I could do about that. Right. So if we're dealing with where we are right now, what can I do to help you get to a place of feeling more comfortable or feeling more satisfied? What can we do to get to a place that's a bit more copacetic than you rolling your eyes every time I walk into the room?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I had a pretty hard conversation with one of my stepsons about a month ago. And we were just going through a really tough season. And like the adult kid still living in your home thing, it's challenging, right? Because you're like, they're like, you know, I'm an adult, right? I'm like, well, you're actually not paying for anything. And you're not really an adult. Like, if you're an adult, go be an adult, right?
Yeah, please show me the ways.
Please show me how. But I had to say, I said, look, like, just so you know, when this home needs to be my safe space, like everyone's home should feel like their safe space. And when you do A, B, and C, I'm having anxiety in my own home. I've had more anxiety lately than ever. This is how I'm feeling. This is what this does to me. And you could almost see like the look on his face. And he's like, oh, right. Like it never even occurred to him to think about, wow, what does that feel like for her in her own home to have that experience? And, but again, it's like opening up and having those conversations. And you almost have to check your ego too, because we don't want them to think that we don't have it all together. You don't want to show your vulnerable side, which is like bullshit, right? Because we're humans. You can say like, yeah, this is hard for me.
And I think when you do admit that it's hard for you, someone can empathize and choose differently. I think when we hold up this face like nothing bothers us, we're not fazed, then someone doesn't think what they're doing even matters and they don't have to take responsibility. And what you really did was, you know, empower your stepson to actually take responsibility for his behaviors and the impact they're having on you. And I also think, and I believe this to be true for all people, how we do one thing is how we do most. And in the therapeutic space in particular, like how I'm experiencing you as a client is probably how a lot of people are experiencing you in the world. And if I'm having a hard time tolerating what you're saying or doing, I'm going to let you know about it so that we can actually workshop it here, because the chances are your friends aren't going to be able to give you that feedback in a way that feels comfortable.
Yeah, for sure. Like if you find yourself in the same situations in like several different of your relationships,
it's you.
Like what's the common denominator here? Like this is you. Like everyone else is not wrong, right? Like what's happening?
Yeah, it's that, I hope that people don't hate me for this, but there is that victim mindset of everything happens to me. Everyone's out to get me. Nothing works out. Well, yeah, when you disempower yourself to that point, like I guarantee you that's what's going to happen. That's blindfolding yourself and expecting yourself to walk across a tightrope. Who's going to do that successfully? Not many people. So I really think it's harnessing our power, being aware of our power, and not being afraid to use it and share it. And, you know, I said earlier, shine bright. I really mean that. There is a way to take up space that encourages others to be brave as well. And I think that women, especially mothers and stepmothers, need to be doing that more often.
Mm-hmm, totally. Oh, letting go of control, all the things.
It's so hard. And sometimes we're like, oh, I've lit up control on this. And then you just pick it up and plop it on something else, right?
Totally.
But I think that we believe that everyone else is in control. So why wouldn't we be too? And I love when you brought up Instagram earlier. I love how people are doing like the thing right now of my life looks perfect. Here are a few things that are vulnerable to me. It's like great that you're sharing these like three curated vulnerabilities, but is that really your stuff? It's almost like putting a triple band-aid on the one band-aid that they've already placed. It's like it's creating an even more unrealistic viewpoint for someone who may be insecure and scrolling through it.
Yeah. What if we just like came to accept, like, you cannot keep it real on Instagram. You can't share your full self on Instagram. Like, let's stop expecting people to do that.
I agree.
Because if you're doing it for content, it's actually not authentic because there's a strategy behind it.
100%. The only way it could be more authentic is if it was like the real world and your Instagram just followed you around all the time. And then when you actually were taking a photo or a video, if it was like Snapchat, but you could not re-record. Like, there is no person that is posting on Instagram that has not selected the best photo out of a few, edited the photo, redone the video, scripted what they wanted to say, practiced it. That's just not life. And you're right from what you said earlier that it's viewers' discretion and people should know that. But I think the most vulnerable people are the ones looking for answers, and they aren't thinking about that when they doom scrolling.
Mm-hmm.
Or just comparing to their friends' stories, right? Unless someone is very close to you, they're not going to tell you the shitty parts of their marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're sitting here with, you know, a pretty good marriage, but like there's some stupid shit going on. And you think you're the only one. And I think it's that isolation and that belief that everyone has it better that really leaves people feeling lonely and isolated.
Yeah, I almost feel like we need to start pouring into our real life relationships a lot more than we're pouring into Instagram and pouring into social media. Because when you can have those real, true, authentic relationships and friendships in your real life, you're not seeking that validation from online. You have that deeper connection and you're like, oh yeah, like none of that's real. And you can just see it for what it is.
Yeah, and good for that person that they were able to take such a cute photo. Like I was actually... A few weeks ago, I was scrolling and found a woman who I'm due with my second in May. And she was 31 weeks pregnant and she was styling her bump. I'm sitting here in Lululemon Align leggings and a sweater because that's all that fits me. I'm not styling my bump. I'm just looking to like survive. But I actually was a little inspired and I was like, oh, I could kind of piecemeal these things together, right? But I was coming from a place of feeling good about who I was, knowing who I was, so I could take that information. But if I were a very insecure pregnant woman who was feeling horrible about her body, and then I see this woman like crossing Fifth Avenue in Manhattan in her Manolonix, I would feel horrible. So it's the space you're in when you're viewing. And I really encourage people, if you're not in a good place, that's probably not where you need to be going. I would say you need to be going internally and you need to be going to the supports around you. To me, Instagram should be light, fluffy entertainment, not the new version of Googling about like medical problems.
Mm-hmm. No, totally. And I also think you have to understand is like people put a lot of time into that. And so you get to decide what you put your time towards, right? So if you're not feeling, you know, good in your body, you're feeling, you know, fluffy, you're feeling all the things, and you're scrolling and you're looking at someone who's super fit and with a six pack and the bathing suit.
It's the worst.
Yeah. It makes you feel like shit. Right. But then you're also like, okay, they're at the gym at an hour a day. They're eating so healthy, so clean, egg whites, not having dessert, like all those things. So like, look at the outcome and then ask yourself, am I willing to do what it takes to have that? That girl styling her bump, she doesn't do that probably seamlessly. Like at the very beginning of her career in fashion, or, you know, she decided she wanted to put the time in. She was probably watching YouTube videos on fashion before that was ever even a thing.
Oh, she put her back into it. You could tell for sure.
Right. So it's like, do you want to put the time in to have that life too? Like, is that a priority to you?
Yeah, beautifully said. And I also think people don't ask themselves, how am I doing? How am I feeling before they engage in something? So whenever we're picking up our phone, if you ask yourself, like, what am I looking for right now? Or how am I feeling right now? then I think you can kind of target what you do. If you're feeling low, you know, I'd be phoning a friend, putting on a Spotify playlist, maybe listening to a podcast or an audiobook to kind of take my mind off of it. If I'm feeling bored, I'm going to scroll Instagram or TikTok or, you know, New York Times cooking. But I think that it's so automatic for people now that they pick up their phone and they immediately go to whatever it is that will entertain them the most. And I think sometimes what's entertaining you isn't necessarily what you need, but we're not mindful enough to make the change. And I really encourage people to realize, are you living automatic or are you living in manual? And automatic is, I somehow got to my office today. I don't even remember which subway I took because I was just going through the motions. And manual isn't slower. It's not extra effort. It's just being aware of the choices you're making in any given moment and giving yourself the flexibility to choose differently.
Mm-hmm. That's so good. That is a good analogy. I think that might be one of the best ones I've heard about life.
Thank you, Jamie. But it really works. And I think that like everyone gets into these routines and everyone gets into these ruts and they don't see the alternate options. And someone simply would say, well, I wake up and I go to work. Boo-boo. That's actually inaccurate. You wake up, you choose if you're going to sit in bed and drink a cup of water or if you're immediately going to check your emails to get triggered by something. So if you can control that first, I would say half hour of your morning with things that really charge you up and feel good, that email will still be waiting there to ruin your day. It just doesn't have to do it the first thing your eyes see. And if people realized, okay, I wake up, I do my morning routine, I make a wholesome breakfast, I connect with my family. You know, to me, that's 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. period of my husband hasn't left for work, our daughter's up in the kitchen, we're eating together, we're having fun, we're listening to music. I mean, this morning it was so depressing, but like we still tried to go through the motions. And I realized like that really charges me up. And the days where my husband has to leave for the city early, I feel a little lower because we haven't had those moments. So can I wake up 15 minutes earlier to spend time with him? And does that feel good? Or is it that night I'm going to make sure we have dinner together? If you are conscious and aware of the everyday, every moment choices, you can make the smallest tweak and it can have the largest impact. But we have to be aware of all the little things.
Mm-hmm. I love that. It makes me think back to the gratitude piece too, right? This is what I find really really helpful in like writing down what you're grateful for, like your good moments in the day and, or the good moments yesterday. And some of them it's like, you know, my stepson was not a dick yesterday in the kitchen and it was nice, right? Like you could write something like that. Or my stepdaughter said hi to me, like normally she doesn't, or we had a really nice family dinner, like those little moments. So focusing on that, but then like, okay, how do I replicate that? Like, what did I do that day? Like, I always think about like, what did I do in the days where I had a really great day, when I felt very productive, when I felt aligned, I was showing up as my best, the bullshit didn't trigger me. Okay, well, it's the days that I woke up early, I didn't check my email and Instagram right away, I wasn't scrolling through people's reels, I didn't start working right away. Like, it's my worst habit, I try to break it, but like, I just start working literally at 5 a.m. Like it's psychotic. But when I don't do that, I have a far better, more productive day. So going back and wherever you're looking for change in your life and being like, okay, on the days when it's good, how can I replicate that? Like, what are those habits?
Absolutely. And with the example you gave, you know, my stepdaughter smiled at me. She never smiles at me. Figuring out what you did, but then also giving her positive validation and saying like, I had a really nice night with you. Like, I'm looking forward to seeing you tomorrow. When we compliment the good rather than just highlighting the bad and what's not working, it motivates people to want to do it more.
Mm-hmm, for sure. I think that shows up really well in marriages too, right? Like I'll send my husband, if he, you know, will take Reese to school, it's always my job, or like little things that he did, like he helped clean the kitchen the night before, right? And I'm not saying my husband doesn't help with the dishes. Like that's not what I'm saying. Well, sometimes he doesn't, but the next day I wrote him a message like, hey, last night when you helped out and did like A, B, and C, like that was like so helpful to me. I was like, it was basically foreplay, like loved it. Thank you so much. Like, I appreciate you and love you. Right. And you know, someone could say to me, okay, well, isn't it just a given? Shouldn't he be helping? Shouldn't he be contributing in that way? Like, shouldn't it be even? Like,
what is ever even?
Yeah. A whole other podcast. I could totally dive into that. I could rip on that today.
Not even in your marriage, just in life. Like, what is ever even? Life is not fair. Like, get a helmet, figure it out. But that expectation is what leaves people feeling horrible. It really is. And what you said is right. Foreplay starts from the morning, like the moment you wake up. Seriously. Foreplay is not you like starting to rub my shoulder. It's you hearing our daughter crying at 4 a.m. and you popping up before I do.
Yeah, for sure. And like letting them know that you see and appreciate that. Like I do really feel like, you know, men specifically really, they thrive off that like positive reinforcement and they want to please their partners. Mm-hmm. So tell them what they can do. Like stop assuming everyone knows what your experience is. So when your stepkids help out, like, hey, that was super helpful yesterday when you, you know, took your bag upstairs. Yeah, 100%. They should just take their own goddamn bag upstairs. However, they're not. Like, welcome to teenagers. Like, let's stop expecting people to like show up.
Also, welcome to the real world. Like, why are we pretending like your friend's kid does it? Their cleaning lady's moving that bag. Like, it's just, there's no world in which someone is acting perfectly. So I agree. And what's wrong with positively validating the good stuff?
Yeah.
Like, should he be helping you? Yeah. And he does help you. But in this instance, you noticed it. And he might do whatever you described often, but you're so busy doing other things that you just don't pay attention to it. So bravo that you noticed it. You let him know. And now hopefully he does it more. So I just, when people can put a negative spin on anything. That's really the hot take for today.
Yeah. Don't be negative, Nancy.
And do you let it penetrate? But that's them comparing, right? Because their husband doesn't do that. Or you know what I mean? It's like, oh, well, she has to thank her husband for that. I don't even need to say thank you. It's like, oh, cool for you. Like, does that feel better? Can't imagine.
Cool. Like, that's great. You know what? This is a whole different thing, but we have very defined roles in our house. Like, and I've been thinking so much about this. I'm actually going to record a solo podcast on this after this interview. But we talk about running our family like a business a lot. And if you had two CEOs of a business, like that doesn't work. Right? Like you need people, like if you had everyone doing a little bit of finance, a little bit of marketing, a little bit of like all of the things, that doesn't actually work, right? Like there would be miscommunications, there'd be like assumptions, there's like all these things. So Darren and I are very like, there are things that I do and there are things that he does and his jobs, I don't ever even think about. I just assume that they're done and I'm the same respect with him. And then if we're feeling like we need support, we ask, we're like, hey, do you mind, can you do this for me today? I'm feeling I don't have the bandwidth for it. Right. But like the default, we have a lot of default rules. And anyway, that's why I had to thank him for the dishes.
No, I'm with you. And same in our household. My husband is the garbage man. My husband is the recycling man. He is dishes guy. Like anything that could be gross, definitely falling on him. And I'm very grateful for that because that allows me to be, you know, the pack the lunch mom and the pick out my daughter's clothes and make sure the bow matches her hair mom. And I would much rather do that than take out the garbage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Anyway, so good. This has been such a great conversation. I love it. You're amazing. We'll have to get you back on sometime, but where can everyone find you?
So our practice's website is manhattanwellness.org. And if you are not in need of therapy, but you just like, you know, some of the concepts you've heard today, our Instagram is manhattan.wellness. And I really say that's our space to get free therapy, see some good memes, hear some sarcasm, see me post some cringy content. You like laughing at someone, you should definitely follow. But, you know, we really have created and we've built a community. So even if you don't need therapy, but you need support, reach out to us. If you need therapy, we got you. We are growing. We always open up a slot for someone in need. And you know, I really created the space so that what I wish existed when I was going through these life experiences can now be there to support other people.
I love it.
Thank you, Jamie. This was fabulous.
That's it for this one. Thank you so much for tuning in. And if this episode resonated with you, I'd be so grateful if you could share it with someone in your life who you think could benefit from it. And if you haven't already left a rating and a review on iTunes, it really is the best way to support the show. And if you're craving more real talk and coaching and community, be sure to check out my membership, the Kickass Stepmom community. Head to www.kickassstepmom.com to learn more.